You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast. Hello and welcome to the Archaeology Podcast, episode 52. I'm Chris Webster, and my co-host today is Richie Cruz. On today's show, you get to hear Richie and I's You Call This Archaeology live show that we do on Facebook. Let's dig a little deeper. All right, so a short editorial note before we get into the live broadcast. First off, I'm a total idiot, and I forgot to hit record when we first started going live, so you missed like the first 2 minutes of it, and we pick up with the show with Richie talking, and we're just going straight into the podcast. So this show is basically Richie and I talking about all kinds of different things, and that's why we call it You Call This Archaeology. It could be literally anything that we talk about, and it's related to us, and we're archaeologists, and that's how it's related to archaeology. So it's unedited, and we actually inserted the ads this time live, so I'm not going to have an ad break. We do break for ads, but we just talk about the thing. It's WildNote and an APN membership, so spoiler alert, that's what the ads are going to be. But it's still about the same length of show, and I hope you go over to facebook.com/archpodnet, or you go over to YouTube and check out Richie's channel, Happy Archaeology Fun Time, and you can learn all about You Call This Archaeology. It's a live show that we do, like I said, and it's really fun, and we do it so people will engage. So check that out. And also, this is the last episode you're going to hear of the podcast prior to the new radio show that's based on this show. So if you're hearing this on Friday, December 7th, 2018, if you're hearing this in real time, check out knvc.org and check out the live signal. I'll also be posting that on ArcPod on facebook.com/archpodnet. So you can listen to me do the archaeology show basically live on the radio. And if all goes well, I'll have a guest. If not, I'll just be talking about some stuff and you'll be able to call in like a real radio show, because that's what it is, and call in and ask me questions and engage with the podcast. So check that out. And without further ado, here is You Call This Archaeology, episode number 50, live on Facebook and unedited. Here we go.
My neighbor happens to work at a bank, so he's peppered him with like financial questions, investing questions, even though he didn't like want to give any specific information,
right,
which my neighbor needed to figure out what advice to give him. And then he kept hammering me about global warming and like glaciers and like, do you believe that glaciers form Lake Tahoe or whatever, you know? And I was trying to, cause you know, my neighbor, of course, immediately tells him I'm an archaeologist. He's like, oh, neat. I was like, yeah. He's the first person, by the way, this drunk dude was the first person who didn't pepper me up with questions about dinosaurs. But then I had to tell him, you know, that's not something for me. That's like more of a geomorphology question.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, of course, he just rolled his eyes. And then, you know, he's like, well, then what do you do? And I'm like, so I tried to explain, you know, I know a lot about cans. I know a lot about bottles. But he was drunk, so then he just kept going back to glaciers.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me, man, sometimes I feel like one of the reasons why we are so terrible at like delivering our message as archaeologists is because our knowledge is too specialized. Like, we don't know the generalist questions that people want to know.
Right.
Like, no one cares, like, you know, no one cares where this bottle was made. No one cares about hole and top cans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, no one cares about stopes.
Well, that's science communication is a huge problem for a lot of fields.
Yeah.
And you know, archaeology is no stranger to that. I mean, communicating what you do to the outside world, whether you're a scientist or not, can sometimes be difficult. And learning how to do that and unpack terms and not be so, you know, I guess opaque is a skill that you have to learn. And I think that's one thing that benefits us as podcasters and trying to do this for the public is, learning how to do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. A week from today, my new radio show starts in Carson City.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. So.
Wait, is it going to be called Ask an Archaeologist?
It's not called Ask an Archaeologist.
Why not?
Yeah. Well, because it's called The Archaeology Show.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. So, but that's what I expect, though. I expect people to call in and ask questions. And I mean, that's one thing about knowledge about archaeology, too, is people think you know everything. Like, people just assume, like, my family members and stuff, they're like, oh, did you see that thing on the Egyptian pyramids? Like, no, I'm not an Egyptologist. Like, you know, I may have seen the news, but, you know, do I really care about it that much?
No.
Maybe.
No.
You know? So, David Borowski, my friend over in North Dakota, joined us.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's yeah, it's interesting. The things people assume, you know, and then you start talking and then they don't understand a word you say.
Exactly. It's like most people wouldn't even associate historic anything with archaeology.
Yeah.
Or like what we consider historic.
Well, and that's funny too that you mentioned historic specifically, because the CRM Archaeology podcast that we're recording on Sunday is more than likely, if we stick with this topic, going to be focused on historic archaeology in general.
Ah.
You know, Bill White, Dr. Bill White, one of our co-hosts, is a historic archaeologist. And I think we're just going to, he's going to run the show. So I don't really know what we're going to talk about, but historic archaeology is the focus.
Oh, wait, are you going to ask him about his typology of plastic bottles yet?
I am not, but he probably has one. Yeah, yeah. That's the symbol to quit. A typology of plastic bottles.
Bah.
Like when do the number of facets change on a Gatorade but can't bottle? You know,
see?
That's what I'm quitting.
Well, ironically, they were glass right up until what, the 80s?
Were they really?
Yeah, because I found one. Found one, and you know, Gatorade was only invented, was only commercially available in the 70s.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah.
Ha. See, I know things about historics.
Nice. So how's all the job stuff going?
Interesting, but unusual.
Yeah.
You know, on the one hand, you know, for the first time in a long time, I am on unemployment. And more importantly, I'm getting the max.
No.
Or will be getting the max.
You should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I haven't always gotten the max.
Really? How's that possible?
Because sometimes I just didn't average out.
Huh.
You know, just the 3/4 average just didn't work out.
Yeah, yeah. Time off versus time working, basically?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You know, that makes sense then.
Yeah, because sometimes you're like only working 6 months of the year or like 5 months of the year.
Right.
And it's simultaneously more convenient yet more irritating.
Yeah.
Because I remember the very first time I ever filed for unemployment in this state, like I had my phone out and like had it on speaker, and they had me on speakerphone for like 5-6 hours. I almost fell asleep. And that was just to fill out the damn application, but now you can do it all online.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's, and you know, that actually does bring me to something I was going to talk about, because you know, it's a very long story, but a friend of mine, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine this week about, you know, joining the company she's currently working for.
Mm-hmm.
And she did this before. And you know, I was going to talk about the time, you know, before she before I saw, you know, that, you know, her new company is hiring. But basically, years and years ago, you know, she, you know, her crew had like an open slot. So she's like, hey, you should contact this company. So I did.
Yeah.
And this is like Friday morning or something. And so I'm like, hey, my friend says you need, you know, an extra tech. And they're like, oh, hell yeah. You know, show up Monday. And I'm like, all right. And they said, we're going to send out all your paperwork. And so they did. They like sent it over in an email. And then I had to go find some place to print it out, which is still standard. But then this was so long ago that, you know, it's just so long ago enough that I had a BlackBerry.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I still had, they still wanted me to fax in all the new hire paperwork.
Nice.
So I had the, and this is LA, so it's not easy to find a place with a fax machine.
Yeah.
Even like in 2013 or 14 or whenever this was.
Right.
So I had to fill out the paperwork, get everything done, and I had to fax everything in. And of course, you know, everyone leaves the office at like 4 o'clock. So I obviously didn't get in time. And then, you know, I, like Monday comes and I'm like, hey, you know, do you still have a slot for me? And they're like, silence.
Nice.
Because it's only for like a week. So I guess they figured, you know, whatever.
Well, that's funny because that you mentioned that, because for the last 2 days, I've been putting in my the business cards I got from the last few conferences into this basically customer management system that we have.
Neat.
And I was just noticing, because I put in the address and the email address and stuff like that, almost every single business card had a fax number on it.
Yeah.
Like, is that really real estate we need to be putting on our on our business card? Like, if I'm to the point where I need to fax you something, aren't we probably in some other form of contact where, you know, you don't need to waste space on your business card to put a fax number?
Although I bet it's like some kind of online program now. I might be wrong. Maybe they have a physical machine.
It doesn't matter. You're right. There are. I stopped paying for it just a couple of years ago because I used it like twice. I needed a fax number to have something faxed back to me when I first started DigTech.
Yeah.
I can't remember who it was from. It was some agency or something I was trying to do something with. And the only way they would communicate is by fax.
Yeah.
So I found an online fax service where basically they fax to a phone number and you just get like a JPEG or PDF of the thing, right? But that's not my point. My point is, if we're in a relationship where I'm faxing you, because faxing is not like an introductory thing.
No.
It's not like a, hey, here's, like, you're not going to fax somebody a cover letter that says, hey, I'm interested in your company. You want to talk to me?
And,
you know, faxing is more involved in that. You know, have your phone number down there, have your email address on there so I can make that initial conversation. That's what a business card is for.
Yeah.
Is giving that initial contact info. Don't waste space with a fax number.
Oh.
I'm almost disgusted by the fact there was a fax number on there.
See?
Yeah.
But, oh my God. But just to bring this back around, I was filling out some new hire paperwork last week and it was this, almost the same beginning. They're like, yeah, sure. And they sent the email stuff over. I printed out. And then while I'm there at the Kinko's or FedEx Kinko's?
Yeah. FedEx office now.
Yeah. I'm like, I whip out my phone and I scan them. and then, I scan them and then I email and then I attach them to an email and I send it back. And it's like, you know, it was like a painless process.
Right.
And I'm like, my God, like, I remember when I first got in this business, everything was faxed.
Right.
Like, yeah. I mean, you work for Packleg, right?
I did.
Yeah. I worked on a project where you had to fax in your, it was like a per diem receipt, like reimbursement.
Yeah.
And every week they had to set aside one day for the session where everyone would go back to the office early, tape the receipts to the paper, and then fax them to the central office.
We weren't doing that when I worked there. Yeah, luckily. Yeah, what a pain. Well, one of the things we were talking about before we started here today, and without talking about specifics, people or companies or anything like that, I want to talk about, so, you know, our audience for this show probably knows what we're talking about, but just in case the archaeology show audience, we intend to have a little wider audience on that, so I'll let them know what we're talking about here, but it's basically CRM archaeology, cultural resource management archaeology. Yeah. Most of your professional archaeologists in the country are CRM archaeologists, and we usually work from job to job, so a job could be a few weeks, it could be a few months, right?
Yeah.
So you're constantly putting resumes out to other places and kind of lining up your next few things, right? Well, if I were working in another industry and I were, say, you know, I was looking for work and a company took down all my information, took down all the full paperwork information to make me an employee, I would assume that I would be an employee with that company.
Yeah.
Right? So I would assume that at some point in the future, they'd probably tell me that I'm going to have a start date because we're getting all this paperwork together.
Yeah.
But it's not like that in this business. And you don't have to worry about those kind of loyalties that you would have. Like if I applied to 10 different companies and I did 10 different interviews and then one of them said, we're going to send you all this new hire paperwork, I would just assume, even if somebody else called, I'd be like, okay, in a different industry, I'd be like, okay, never mind, I've got a job with this other company, unless the deal was sweeter on the other side, but I would say thank you, but no thanks. I've got a job already. But in archaeology, you just got to keep pressing forward until your boot's on the ground.
I know.
You know, I mean, and it's just, but I don't feel like enough people really realize that, enough people in this industry realize that you have to press forward with your resumes. And until you are actually on the ground in the field, you don't have that job. I don't care if they gave you an office and put your name on the plaque. You don't have a job unless you're sitting in that desk or your boots on the ground.
I was going to say until your first paycheck clears.
Well, that might be true too. Yeah. You may not have a job even then. So anyway, it's just, it's weird. And I don't, as an employer, I wouldn't expect any sort of loyalty to somebody if I didn't give them a specific date that they were starting.
Yeah.
If I said, hey, I'm just putting you on the books so I can get things ready, so when we do have a job, we can go. If you called me and said, listen, I just took a job that's going to last 6 months, I'd be like, all right, I'll see you in 6 months. Because I expect that out of CRM archaeologist. I don't expect you to sit on your heels for 2 months, collect unemployment, and then be ready when I call. I expect to have five positions available. If I have five positions available, I want 15 people on the books that I can call. And that's just how it goes,
But you say that, and yet plenty of companies around here in this town expect you to be on unemployment or have some kind of like unlimited funds or something. And then when they call you, suddenly like you got to be there.
I know. They just have this weird view of how this business works. And I don't really understand it.
Yeah.
I don't know where it comes from because they were all field techs at some point.
Some of them.
Some of them. But a lot of the people that I know that you're referring to, they've probably, a lot of them have worked for either one company or maybe one or two companies for their entire career. So they probably really don't understand shovel bumming.
Yeah.
They really don't get that, I'm talking to you, but I'm also talking to 15 other people.
Yeah.
I gotta stay working. You know, yeah. I got to stay mobile.
Yeah, and they're like, well, we put you on unemployed status, so, you know, you can collect unemployment. But it's like, you know, that doesn't go very far.
No, it's not full paycheck.
No.
You know, it doesn't pay all the bills.
No.
So, I mean, you've got to run pretty lean on unemployment just to be able to survive, you know? You know that, and most people listening to this call know that.
Yeah.
So.
It's also why I am still looking for, like, regular work, even though one of the things I'm always glad for is the fact that, one of the things to keep in mind when you go on unemployment is they can't force you to be like, hey, you were an archaeology field tech and now you're going to work at McDonald's. They can't do that. Or can they?
They can't. No, yeah. if you go in, like I was on unemployment years ago and for a little while before I started my company, you know, you need that gap. You're paying for it anyway. Yeah. You may as well use it. That was the thing. Like, They're all of the unemployment companies, like, normal things that they do, it just doesn't work for archaeology.
No.
You know, I even had a special guy attached to me because I was VA. I was a veteran. So I worked with a special veteran guy that actually, like, did research for me into companies. And he actually found a couple companies in Reno and called them and said, do you have any work for this guy? You know, he called a couple of the ones that we know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they're like, no, we don't have anything. And I was like, I had already applied there, but thanks. You know, so, I mean, I got laid off at the end of October, beginning of November. There's not going to be a whole lot of work available in Reno.
No.
You know, and at the time, I was already like mentally checking out of CRM and I wanted to start my own business and focus on that.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really looking outside Reno either. And my wife had stopped doing archaeology and when we were both doing it, we would just travel and pick up a job anywhere in the country. You know, it didn't matter. But now that she wasn't, I wasn't interested in working in like Arizona for 2 months.
Why not?
Or something. Well, because I'm married.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, if I can find work here, I wanted to find work here.
Yeah.
You know, but I just wasn't looking. So that's why. If I had enough experience that if I had looked around, I probably could have found something anywhere I wanted, you know, just apply. If you're willing to drive, there's work out there. You know?
Oh my God.
Ryan Howell joined, by the way. How's it going, Ryan?
Oh, yo, dude, what's up?
I finally met him for the first time.
Oh, you did?
At the Mac conference in Indiana.
Neat.
Yeah. So.
Aha.
Anyway.
Oh my God.
Let's take a break real quick.
Oh yeah.
Because we should have breaks on this show.
Oh, we do?
And we're up to a break in the archaeology show. And I usually run an ad for, we'll do two ads. This one will be for WildNote.
All right.
And the next one will be for membership.
Oh,
so,
all right.
So. My microphone keeps failing. So WildNoteApp.com is a digital recording and management system.
Oh,
and it's really starting to take off. You know, we're getting some good engagement from companies. Some big companies in California and a few in Utah are really looking at us hard. And we're putting proposals together for them. And if you're a field tech, there's a decent chance you're going to be using WildNote on some project probably within the next year or two.
Really?
Yeah. It's getting pretty crazy. So you logged into it on an invitation from me a while back.
Yeah.
And did you really play around with it much at the time?
Not really.
So we have a few people, I should bring them in, that have played with it a little bit.
Ooh.
And man, we should really talk about it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we won't go there. Check out WildNote. If you go to YouTube and you type in WildNote, we have a bunch of help videos on there now.
Oh.
I think there's about 30 different help videos on there that I put together.
Yeah.
They're all about anywhere from a couple minutes to like 5 or 6 minutes at the most.
Yeah.
And they're on individual topics to show you how to use WildNote. So WildNoteApp.com and YouTube, and then search WildNote and you'll find all of our videos. And Richie's got the page up here.
Yeah.
If you click on help, I'm not sure you can find it here, but once you're actually doing the free trial, it's a 30-day free trial, you can click on help and that will take you to some of our videos as well.
Oh, wait, what happens if I click free trial right now?
Well, then it'll have you sign up for an account.
Oh.
You don't want to do that.
Why not?
Because you already have one.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. So anyway, check out WildNote. Like I said, free 30-day trial. You can't really go wrong. And I'll do a free demo for you. So that's that. So check out WildNoteApp.com. Now
cool.
back to the show.
Yay.
It's our first like inline dynamic ad.
Neat.
You know, all the big podcasts do it.
See?
So I think you were going to say something before I launched into my WildNote diatribe.
Oh my God. No.
Well, until you think of that, I just in case something happens, we don't podcast between now and then. I'll be at the Society for Historical Archaeology Conference in January.
Wow, that's coming quick.
I know. I just got a call from Delta today with a flight change. So wow. That made me think about it. But yeah, we have, we'll be in the tech room, which is actually in the vendor room,
yeah.
Which is pretty cool. So we're in this like tech area set aside in the vendor hall Thursday and Friday. And I'll be setting up meetings with people to really talk to them about WildNote and maybe do a really more formal demo for them all day Saturday, since we won't be... since the tech room's not open Saturday, and we're not in the vendor hall. So we'll have all day Saturday to talk to people and do that. So St. Charles, Missouri, if you're going to be there, contact me, chris@wildnoteapp.com.
Oh, wait, is that Danish guy or whatever?
Could Michael Kappers?
There? Yeah.
Yeah, he'll be there. Yeah, he's always in the vendor hall. Yeah. No, his Interis Registries is a really great program.
Ah.
Yeah, it's a really great back-end database, and it's really good for organizing just everything that you need to do. And we're going to be working with him as soon as we get a little further along and he gets a little further along. We're going to be working with him to work on an input system for Interis Registries that you can use WildNote to export into Interis.
Ah.
Yeah. So everything coming full circle on that one.
Oh, my God. It almost sounds like you have a real product. That you can use right now.
It's almost like you can just download it and use it. It's crazy. It's crazy talk. Yeah. Roberta joined. Old friend from the Reno Freethinkers here in Reno, Nevada.
Oh.
I posted this on my personal Facebook page, so I'm getting a lot of friends that aren't archaeologists joining, which is great, because that's what we want.
Oh, yeah. Before I forget. The Reno Freethinkers, do they do that Festivus thing? Or am I thinking something else?
No, we did that in the past. I haven't been part of them for a couple of years now, just because I've had so much on my plate. I had to back off from a couple things.
Yeah.
And when I join something and do something, I typically want to run it or be part of the management.
Yeah. Oh.
And I just like, my only way to not do that is to basically step back for a little while. You know, I think the one thing in my life that I won't do that on is Civil Air Patrol. Because I'm squadron commander right now. You can't go any higher in a squadron.
Yeah.
And I'm building up a squadron, and I think you should do this at every company you go to, every organization you belong to, is build up a bunch of people under you. So when you step back, you can just drop into a regular position and just let other people run it. And it's going to run smoothly and go well.
That sounds like crazy talk, especially coming from CRM archaeology companies where you can never, ever let go of anything.
Well, I know. That's why we have 70 and 80-year-olds still running the company, because they can't let go. You know, it's like retire already. You know, let somebody else run the company.
But then what are they going to do with themselves?
Well, they're going to write reports. They're going to lecture. They're going to, you know, speak at events. That's what I would do.
But is that fulfilling as being in control of everything?
Well, I don't know. It really depends. So, hey, if any of you non-archaeologists have any questions for us about archaeology or professional archaeology or anything like that, put them in the comments.
And then we'll look them up on Google.
yeah, exactly. We'll look it up on Google, and then we'll tell you. Yeah, we'll read the Wikipedia entry to you live on the air. That's funny. Yeah. So what else you got going on at the end of end of November here?
Oh, my God. Well, let's see. Oh, my God. I was thinking about it because I have a new phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like my neighbor has like a similar phone to like my old one. And I was showing him the other day. It's like, hey, you know, I can have two apps open at the same time and be listening to YouTube. And two nights ago,
mm-hmm.
I was at Panda Express. And I was in line, and it was a really long line because I went there like an idiot at 6:30. And so it's like, you know, a 20-minute wait. And so I'm sitting there, and I've got my two apps open, and I'm not using YouTube because I'm not going to use up all my data.
Yeah.
But I was like writing an email. I wrote two emails, in fact. And I'm thinking, man, I can literally work from everywhere, and I am. Like, you know, I work from there. Last night I was at a bar. Wait, was it last night? Or is it two nights ago, too? Anyway.
Every night you're at a bar.
No. You know.
What kind of archaeology? You call that archaeology?
See? Always. You know, because when I'm at home, I don't have the discipline to, like, you know, to, like, work on stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's kind of like the way, you know, you found it more productive to be here at Collective than you were at home.
That's true.
Yeah. And, you know, but I was thinking, man, I'm literally working whenever I'm not at home. I'm literally just always working. Like, even when I should be sitting here at the bar.
Right.
Like, you know, sitting here at the bar, relaxing, having a drink. And I'm thinking, man, how do you figure out a work-life balance? But then again, can you if you're like a field tech? Because you're like, you always have to be out there.
Yeah.
So it's like, man. Also, thank God for modern phones.
I think work-life balance is all what you make it. You know, people talk about that a lot. And I think it really pertains to people that, you know, that have jobs that are really tasking jobs when they're at work, you know, like their 60-hour a week jobs or something.
Yeah.
You have to be able to go home and just like unplug from that.
Yeah.
But in jobs like ours, like let's say you were a something people can't understand. Let's say you're a professional singer. You know, you're a musician or something like that. When you're off playing a concert or you're playing at a coffee shop or you're doing whatever you're doing, you probably still like to come home and listen to music. You probably still like to come home and even play music, you know? Yeah. If you're a singer, you probably, you know, you'll work all day recording an album and you'll probably sing in the car on the way home.
Yeah.
You know, because, well, you might not because you have to save your voice. But the point is, you like doing it. And we understand that. You know, we get that. Like, if you're a, you know, professional baseball and football and basketball players, they play baseball, basketball, and football in the off season. You know, partly because they're professionals and they need to maintain their skills, but they also like it.
Yeah.
You know, they probably are, you know, playing with their kids and stuff like that. Now, archaeologists, we go to work all day and, you know, you might come home and you go look in the hotel. If you got 20 people on a crew and look in the 20 different hotel rooms, there might be Discovery Channel or Nat Geo or something on most of those TVs. I mean, come on. Somebody's got something on.
Yeah. Oh, you know? Yeah.
Or they've got a book about archaeology sitting there, or they've got a paper they're reading, or they've got a paper they're writing.
True.
You know, something. And I just don't know.
But I feel like that's different than having to constantly always be on the lookout for work.
Well, that's just a fact of the job, though.
I know.
You know, that I don't consider, that's kind of work-life balance, but is it? It's not really work, looking for work. It is work, but does it count as work? You know what I mean? I don't know.
Why not?
It's a weird philosophical question.
Because that's like saying looking for projects. You know, if you're a project manager or filling out proposals, isn't working?
Yeah, but you're working for another company and that is your job.
That's true.
But no one's paying you to look for work.
True.
It's a weird way to think about it because most people don't look for a job more than a few times in their life. But we look for jobs, you know, every couple months, every couple weeks.
Yeah, every
constantly, day. Constantly, throughout the year.
Yeah, every day.
Yeah. I mean, you're always... In fact, if you're working as an archaeologist right now and you're not keeping an eye on shovel bums and arc field work and looking out and seeing what's out there, you're probably going to find yourself unemployed at some point with no prospects.
Exactly.
You know, now if you've been working someplace in the same place for the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, first off, good on you.
Yeah.
But second, you know, you got to keep your eye on the weather vane at that company and see, you know, which way is the wind blowing here? Am I going to have a job next year? You know, do we have people? What's your business developer like? You know, are they bringing in work consistently? Do you work for a huge engineering firm that can float the failing archaeology department for a little while? You know,
yeah.
That's one reason I would probably, if I got back into shovel bumming or CRM, really like that for somebody else.
Yeah.
I would almost 100% try to find a job with a major firm.
Oh.
Because they have the flexibility, they have the benefits, they have the flexibility and the pay to be able to float your department during the hard times.
True.
You know, whereas if you work for a pure archaeology company, they're purely at the whim of the construction industry, you know, and the development industry. And that's just like no way to live. It's just too much. Like you can have a $500,000 project you're working on right now and then have no work for the next 6 months and be bankrupt.
Yeah. You know, and well, that's just true.
It. Hey, my cousin Amanda joined.
Hey.
Hi, Amanda.
Hello there. But what was I thinking? But then that's how you also end up with companies where, like, they don't, like, the cultural division doesn't seem to know what they're doing, and they put people in positions of power who don't, like, who look good on paper, but don't actually know what they're doing on the ground.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I did an interview recently, and I mentioned a project you, I mean, we mentioned this on the CRM Archaeology show, too, but I mentioned a project, you know, that we were both on, that we first both met on, and it's like it was such a horribly run project that, you know, like people to this day still remember it, and not fondly. Not just the people who worked on it, but like everyone in that region, like, oh, I've heard of that project, but they don't say it in a positive way.
Yeah.
You know, and yet the HR person was like, these people are so qualified. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, they are awesome. Or like, this person doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they're like, no.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you gotta put that stuff in your resume though.
I don't put that project on my resume.
Are you serious?
Well, I don't put that company on my resume. I put it on my BLM experience sheet.
Yeah, because they don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would, I try not to admit working for that company.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I haven't had to give anybody, except for the BLM, my full resume in a while.
Yeah.
You know, I just did to the Civil Air Patrol a little while ago for a volunteer position, but they don't care about any of that stuff.
Ah.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. So there's definitely some projects that are really polarizing, because there's some people that maybe, I don't know if this is true or not, but there might be some people that would have been like, oh, cool, you worked on that, you know, or you did this, but didn't know anything about the company or the project. They just know that you worked on a big project for a big client, and that's beneficial. But that's how you spin it, right? Like, I have this webinar called Getting Out of Archaeology because that only a couple of people have taken, but that's a good thing. Maybe people don't want to get out, but it's basically talking about spinning your experience and your skills into real world terms. Yeah. And, you know, if you worked on a project that was, you know, horribly run, everybody's heard about it, you know, they don't want to know anything about it, you can just say, listen, mention the client then, because that's not confidential information. Typically you could say, hey, worked on this huge project. The client was this client, and it was this type of project. It was because we worked on a fiber optic line that ran a multi-state fiber optic line. I would put that on my resume.
I guess that's true.
Multi-state survey fiber optic line, filling out, you know, these forms, and that's what you highlight on the resume. And if you don't want to put the company that was managing that, then you don't have to. Of course, if they ask you point blank in the interview, they're probably trying to see if you admit to it. And don't lie, because they probably already know.
But, you know, I think it's interesting, that project versus, like, say, working the Ruby pipeline, because obviously I work for a good company, but there were, like, what, 6 or 7 companies that worked on that project, and some of them were terrible and some of them were good. And yet, And yet, you know, you mentioned you work on that project, and yet no one, no matter which company you admit working for, no one's like, ugh.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, neat.
Yeah.
You know, you worked on that project.
I have the same experience with Rex East.
Ah, yeah.
Everybody's heard of Rex East. It's been in this more than 10 years, you know, or at least 10 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, we only worked on Rex East for like a month and a half, 2 months maybe.
Really?
Yeah. It wasn't very long. Oh. We got on there in like early February, and we left in mid to the end of March because it was so goddamned cold. It was just so cold. And we got this project in New Mexico, and we're like, yes, please, let's go. So, I mean, we went from, talk about polarizing, polar opposites. We went from freezing cold. Like, when I say freezing, like the high was 5. Like the first 10 day we were there, the high every day was 5 degrees Fahrenheit. And I hate being hot, but I hate being cold too. I like to be like right in the middle, right?
Yeah.
So this was just ridiculous. And we went from that to still not super warm in high altitude New Mexico near Chaco Canyon, but not any snow on the ground. And you know, we were able to just have jacket and gloves and it was fine. But we're just finding Anasazi black on white pottery. Like, we're just crunching it under our feet. There's so much of it. Yeah. You know, we go from nothing in Ohio, farmland, you know, to the occasional chert flake, you know, like once every other day, to Anasazi black on white. That was pretty sweet.
Oh my God. You know, it's interesting the way that people handle different artifacts in different regions.
Yeah.
Because when I was in Utah, like, everyone's like, oh, yeah, just bite into it and see, you know, if it's soft, then it's pottery. And if it's not, it's probably just a rock.
I mean, you can't bite into some of that really hard pottery. You'll break it.
Well, it depends. But then, you know,
you don't want to leave teeth impressions in it either.
Yeah, overrated.
You can lick it.
And, you know, I did that out of here. And, like, the person I was with was, like, completely grossed out, never heard of it, and, like, wanted to ban it, like, throughout the entire country. Like, no one can ever bite anything. And I'm like, fine.
Yeah.
I thought it was also interesting because, you know, when I was in Utah, they were breaking apart. You know, everyone had their little pliers and they would break it apart to test the temper, to see what the temper was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, you try that out here, like, people, like, literally, like, you know, die.
It really depends on the sample size. You know, like, if you've got, like, when we were down in New Mexico, like I said, you're bagging up 700 sherds for every level, right? I mean, they're just everywhere.
Yeah.
But if we were in Nevada and we found ceramics, chances are you've only got like 4 or 5 sherds, because you never find ceramics in Nevada. And, I mean, maybe you'll find the Fremont, what is it, brownware or something like that, down in like the southeastern corner of the state.
Oh.
Or even on the eastern side. Yeah. Yeah. You might find that, but you're not going to find a lot of it. You're going to find a little bit of it. And if you're there breaking pieces apart, I'll tell you what, you're probably going to get kicked off that project and out of that company. Yeah, I mean, you just don't do that, you know? But like in the East Coast when I was working, we would find, and we worked on a couple excavations where we found tens of thousands of sherds, you know, over the course of a couple of months. And I'll tell you what, I probably broke half of them with my shovel. So what's the difference?
The thing is, how do you figure out the temper if you can't break them?
Well, chances are you don't have a complete pot, so you can see the edge if you just clean it up with a...
Well, that's true.
You know, clean it up with some moisture and a small brush or something like that. You can see the temper pretty easily. You know, because if you've got a broken edge... I mean, if you've got a complete pot, you're not going to be breaking that anyway. And you just have to figure it out from something else. You're just going to not know, you know.
Interesting.
But I don't think there's ever a reason to break a sherd to figure out the temper.
Bah.
Never once.
Bah. Well, I don't know. I mean, that's what I saw. That's what I saw in Utah, and that's what everyone in Arizona did.
I've rubbed them at the edge of my pants before. You know, if you can't take it back to the lab, if you're not collecting it, you just rub it really hard, you know, and get off all the dirt and sand, and maybe even put some of your water on it from your Camelback or something, and clean it up. If you can see a cross section to the edge, you can see the temper.
But I also think that brings to mind like regional archaeology and regional archaeology differences.
Probably. There's different practices and different things.
Yeah, like things we do here in Nevada, like freak out people in other parts of the country.
Possibly.
Like, you know, my God, it's just a can. Yeah. Like, why would you even think about stopping for that?
I know.
Like,
I
how
know.
Many times have you been to other parts of the country and like that's the reaction when you say, oh, I found a can.
Yeah.
Or I found a bottle. It's like, great, stop.
Which is interesting because in a lot of places, well, I guess it depends on where you're working too, because if you're on like Forest Service land, a lot of times the rules are different.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's a blanket change, but for example, a lot of times you're under, what is it? The I'm totally blanking on it, the Antiquities Act. But it basically says 100 years is the threshold, not 50 years.
It is?
Yeah. If 100 years is the threshold for what you're going to record, if something has to be 100 years old, there's very little can and bottle activity you're going to be recording from 1918 on, you know, not to say there isn't any.
Yeah.
It depends on what the historic settlement was in your area.
Yeah.
But if people didn't come into there until the 30s or 40s or something, and you see a can and your threshold's 100 years, and you're going to walk right past that. You know?
Interesting.
There's no point in recording it.
Oh.
So now most of the time out here in the BLM land, we're working with a 50-year rule, you know, which as of now is, of course, 1968, soon to be 1969. We're going to be recording from the summer of 69. That's going to be some interesting stuff. So,
oh my God, you know what else I thought was interesting in Utah? Mm. I was working in Utah. Like, people would be, like, freaking out over, like, you know, these primary flakes. And I'm like, and? Or they like, oh my God, look, it's a biface. And I'm like, and? There's like a bajillion of those in this stupid...
Yeah.
Well, not maybe not in Utah, but there's definitely a bajillion in this state.
I know.
It's like, well, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's a flake.
Hey, Rocky joined us.
Oh, yeah, what's up?
Hey, Rocky. Speaking of flakes, Rocky, rocks, flakes. No, that was a bad joke.
All right.
That was a bad joke. I do like the fact that when he had his first child, they were calling him a pebble or something like that.
They were?
Because his name was Rocky. No, like before he was born, something like that. I can't remember what it was, but it was geology related and hilarious.
Interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, let's take our final break.
Oh, yeah.
And talk about ArcPodNet membership.
Oh.
So arcpodnet.com/members. You know, I do actually have a stack of business cards that I've collected over the last month for advertising on the APN. But I hate putting advertising on the APN.
Yeah.
It's tedious. I've got to worry about the agreements. You know, it's a pain in the ass to do advertising and I don't want to do it. So I want to be listener supported. And we have a handful of listeners, probably about 40 or so, that are paid members of the Archaeology Podcast Network. There's a $5, what is it? $5, $10, and $20 levels. But you can save 30% if you go annually.
Yeah.
So if you look at each one of those, you can save 30% if you buy a whole year's worth.
Yeah.
And which we've had, I would say most of the people that have signed up in the last like 6 months have done the annual.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's pretty great. You get some stuff for it.
Yeah.
Admittedly, you probably don't get a ton for it right now. But that being said, you're supporting us, you know, and I need to clear up in case you're looking at this.
Yeah.
Or you're hearing us and you're checking it out. Some people have sent me a message and said, hey, you know, I'm going to cancel my membership because I can't listen to all the podcasts. I'm like, well, you can still support us.
Yeah.
That's great. You know, I mean, do what you got to do. If you can't afford it, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But if you can, but you're worried about listening to shows, just keep supporting us. And some people have sent me an email saying, hey, how much does it cost me to listen to your podcasts? I'm like, it's
$1 million.
Free. Yeah, right? It's free. You don't have to pay us to listen to our podcasts, but membership just allows you to get some extras, get the episodes a little bit early when I'm not like on the last day, you know, submitting an episode. You get a little bit of swag in some cases. professional members get the Team Black webinars for free.
Oh, they do?
Yes. And we have a $50 webinar coming up here on December 18th. I just posted it today. It's another, it's a Koso Rock Art and Shamanism webinar from Dr. Alan Gold, Dr. Alan Garfinkel. And it's $50 a seat. We had 15 people join us last time we did a similar one.
Really?
With a different topic, yeah. But it's free for APN professional members.
Oh.
So check that out. And when you do scroll down the website, you'll see that a little pop-up comes up. You can at least join our mailing list. And yeah, we only send out an email once a week, if that. And and you just get to see what shows are coming up and all that stuff. So you don't have to be a member for that. But anyway, that's APN membership, arcpodnet.com/members. As you can see, supporting standard professional.
Yeah.
You know, $5 a month or $42 a year is really not that bad for supporting. That just puts a few dollars in our pocket, allows us to keep the lights on, allows us to keep this going. And, you know, with my commitments increasing in other areas, ooh, I really need to be able to pay for some people to do some high quality editing. And that's not cheap.
No.
You know, I mean, you're looking at $50 an hour and probably close to 2 to 3 hours per episode to edit an hour long episode. And that's expensive. And I want to be able to hire someone to do that.
And that's just for audio.
And that's like, just for audio, yeah.
It's like, man, I'm thinking today, I really need at least one more computer, if not two.
Yeah, it's huge. So, and you can also support us. You see Richie put up a picture from our swag store over at TeePublic. There's different designs. I've been working on a couple of new things that I want to put up in, hopefully this weekend.
Oh, shoot. I should be too.
Yeah.
Maybe I will.
You mean for the APN store?
Yeah.
Yeah, send them over to me.
I know.
Yeah. So I'll show you this. Remind me to show you the stuff I've got and you can see what kind of theme I'm going for. I think you could help out with that quite a while.
Right.
So anyway, and if you're willing to donate any archaeology related designs to the APN that we can put up on the store, you know, we don't make a ton of money off this store, so I wish I could pay you for the design, but when we make 50 cents off a sale or $2 off a sale.
Really?
If we were getting 1,000 sales a month, I'd be like, hell, here's $500 for your design, but we're not. So, you know, maybe sometime in the future, but if you're willing to donate a design to us that we can have on there, even if so, you can go, you know, pick up a shirt with that design on it. It's super simple. You can give me the design. It's available like 2 minutes after I put it on the TeePublic store.
Really?
On anything we have to offer. Yeah. So within like 3 or 4 days, your idea could be sitting on your cell phone case or on a pillow or on a sweatshirt, you know, in your house.
Yeah.
So it's pretty quick. Anyway, back to the show.
Yeah.
What else we got?
Other than still mourning over the fact that my favorite bar closed.
Still no word on why that happened?
No? Well, I mean, you know, basically there had a lot of rent overhead.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. And my God, it is hard finding a new bar that serves dark beer.
Oh, yeah.
Here in town. Because all the damn hipster bars.
Yeah.
You know, all they want to serve is like freaking, is cocktails.
Right.
And any place that serves beer closes at 10. And I'm like, 10?
I mean, fancy cocktails are pretty good these days, though. They got some nice stuff. That 1864 Tavern, they make like an amazing old fashioned because they make their own bitters, they do all their own stuff, and it's just really well researched.
Oh, by the way, the last trivia night. Oh, yeah. That's when I was there. I was there for trivia night, and it was Star Wars trivia night.
Nice.
I didn't really care about that. I just cared about the fact that they carried Dirty Wookiee from Brewer's Cabinet for $5.
Nice. I got to mention one more time, just before I forget.
Oh.
And I'd like to see for the people that are still listening, if you were listening to this program, well, this is the exact same thing that I'm going to be doing basically next week on the radio, except, I mean, I don't have a co-host, but
yeah,
I'll have some sort of content. I'm working on a guest actually for that show.
You are?
And I just got to kind of work it out. But even if I don't have a guest, it's basically going to be me talking about stuff and hopefully not talking for an entire hour because I want people to call in. So you non-archaeologists on the list here, or even you archaeologists, if you were listening to an archaeology program on the radio,
yeah,
what kind of stuff would you call in about? What kind of stuff would get you fired up enough to call the phone number that we're going to be putting out? And actually talk with me on the radio and get your answers or at least hear my discussion, whether or not it's an answer.
Oh, biblical archaeology.
What's that?
Biblical archaeology.
Oh my God. I don't know anything about it. It's all fake. No. Mark Silver joined. So again, another non-archaeologist. So if you were listening to an archaeology related program on the radio and you had a burning question, you know, especially you people that live in places like Nevada where we've got history all around us.
What about the redheaded giants of Lovelock?
I mean, that's the kind of stuff I'm probably going to get, quite frankly. That's exactly what I'm going to get. Yeah. It's like, how did aliens build the pyramids and then get away without leaving any trace of themselves? That is such a crazy question.
Or how much is this Arrowhead worth?
Oh, my God. That's the other kind of question I'm expecting, too, is artifact appraisal.
Yeah.
I need to set the ground rules right off the bat and say, I'm not appraising artifacts.
Only if you send them to me personally.
I know. Right? I'm probably going to lose my entire audience right off the bat because I'm going to launch into this whole thing about regulations. What is cultural resource management? What do we do? What are your rights and responsibilities as a landowner and as a public citizen? You know, what are the penalties to picking stuff up on BLM land? Why shouldn't you do it from a legal and an ethical standpoint?
Yeah.
You know, why? All those sorts of things I'm going to go over right off the bat. And I'm going to put out right at the top of the show, we've talked about this. I've talked about it on other podcasts, how I don't care about artifacts. Artifacts tell a story. Individually, they're meaningless to me. They're meaningful to other people that used to own them, right?
Yeah.
Or whose ancestors owned them, like Native Americans and things like that. I mean, think about any heirlooms you may have, you know, from your ancestors, right? Those have meaning to you, but they don't have any meaning to me. But what it does, like if I saw a collection of goods that you had handed down to you, that would tell me something about you and your family, right? That's what that does. It tells a story. And that's what I want to try to impart to people. The number one question archaeologists get from non-archaeologists is, what's the coolest thing you've found? And I try to tell them, well, I haven't found anything cool, but I've been able to, you know, take part in a number of really cool stories.
Oh.
You know, like I found this and this and this and this, and they all told me that people lived here and they did these things at this time, and maybe we didn't know that those people were here in this area at that time, and that's a really cool thing to know.
Interesting. You could almost bring, even if you really wanted to lose your audience, you could almost fold in like philosophical discussions and like, because that's a very Kantian point of view in terms of well, stuff only has meaning, you know, like in a group wise.
Right.
You know.
It's got to be in context.
Yeah. I was terrible at philosophy, so.
Well, I probably would be terrible at like real philosophy too, but in just terms of just talking about it without the jargon, like I'm doing this course through the Air Force, and the whole first part of it is on critical thinking and logic. And while I understand really well critical thinking, the discussions about logic, like arguments and statements and, you know, this types of arguments and this types of non-arguments and all these different things, I'm like, how does this help me, like, understand what the hell I'm doing here? Like, I'm just trying to learn the terms, and I don't get it, but it's really hard. So anyway, talking about philosophy from just a real practical user standpoint, that I can do. And I have a lot of ideas towards that stuff. And in fact, there's a website out there.
Yeah.
Called Archaeoanalytics, and we've interviewed her, the woman who started it, on our show before, I think on Archaeotech. And while I really appreciate what she's doing, I think the emphasis on sharing pictures of artifacts with description and stuff like that, like high-res photos and things like that, that's what she wants people to do. I really think it puts the focus in the wrong direction, you know, and you should... But I don't know how to highlight something else in archaeology. How do you highlight visually in the visual medium of social media a story? How do you do that? You have to do it through items. So you have to be able to attach to this really cool projectile point or arrowhead that you found and say, here's the story attached to it. But unfortunately, as people are scrolling by, they're just going to see the picture.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what gives them value. So when a collector says, how much is this worth? That value is assigned by the society and culture around it. See? You know, if it's worth nothing to anybody, then they're not going to collect them anymore.
Yeah.
You know, but if it actually has a dollar value because people want to own that piece of history.
Or they want to preserve it.
Well, they say they want to preserve it, but is it preserved if no one else can have access to it?
Obviously.
Sure. Yeah.
No, but, you know, it's why we have a job, isn't it? Because people want to preserve these old buildings that that developers want to tear down.
Sure. But we're preserving them in a way that other people have access to that information.
True.
If you preserve it by putting it in a shadow box over your mantle that only you and your family and close friends can see, that's not preservation.
Yeah, but they swear. They always swear they're going to give it to a museum when they die.
I know. And they might want to do that, but what their relatives actually do when they die is another story entirely.
Yeah, they either eBay or throw it in the trash.
Yeah, exactly. you know.
Oh my God, but to bring it back to something else entirely different, but sure, still related. This week was the LA Auto Show, and I saw the coolest thing there. I've been looking at every YouTube video I can see of it. It's called the Rivian pickup truck. R-I-V-I-A-N.
You by probably
who? No, that's the name of the company.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They it's the first off-road capable you can get it wet pickup truck.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's like got a 300-mile range. I mean, it's going to be crazy expensive, like $60,000, but it's going to be a actual real truck.
So fully electric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a real truck. And, you know, people, like all these YouTube comments were like, oh my God, what's that going to be useful for? And I was thinking, how many times, you know, have you and I and various other people who are watching been on a mine and like, you know, trucks don't move for like months at a time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, man. And, you know, they only drive them like what? 2-3 miles at a time?
Yeah.
Like an electric truck would be perfect.
I know.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty great.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I did hear something about the LA Auto Show this morning. I haven't looked up any stuff about it, but the article I saw was how the focus was not necessarily even on vehicles, but on technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of one and the same when you're talking about electric vehicles right now.
Yeah.
But that's pretty neat where we're going with this. I mean, Elon Musk is talking about a truck, a Tesla truck model.
Yeah. But this one's going to be available in 2020.
In what?
2020.
2020. That's not too bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you can already put down your pre-order for it.
Well, we'll see if Tesla comes out with one, because I heard that Elon Musk said, what is there, like a 70 or 80% chance that he will be living on Mars? Like the minute he can get a colony up there, he's going to live there. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I'd want the boss that close with like no possibility of him getting out of there. You know what I mean? That's going to have to be one hell of a settlement for him to be living there and not causing total, you know, chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it'd be pretty cool to have an electric truck. There's a lot of good that can come from that.
Yeah.
You know, especially if the range is decent and it's got a good... Usually those electric drivetrains have a lot of torque and power, which we need sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
So that'd be pretty neat.
Oh my God. You know what else I watched on YouTube? Apparently, unsurprisingly, in California, there's a cottage industry based around reconditioning or selling reconditioned Prius batteries.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and like they a battery pack for like let's see, the generation of Prius right before the one you had, like $1,500. And if you buy a Prius with a dead battery pack, that's like what, $1,000, $1,500. And like, you know, with a good battery pack, they're worth about $4,000. So you know, and so I was watching that, and I was like, man, you can totally do this with just hand tools and a lot of muscle.
Yeah.
I was thinking, man, maybe a Prius would be an awesome thing to buy.
Well, I'd imagine that, you know, I mean, Priuses get in accidents just like any other car does. You know, you could probably go, there's probably a good secondary market for that stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But it's crazy. Oh my God. It's crazy how easy it is too. I mean, obviously this dude said he had to take a class and everything, but you know.
I'm sure.
You know, it's still cool.
Yeah.
It makes me think, man, like, you know, I should have done that or I should do that. Even though I really like my convertible, and my neighbors would kill me if I got a third vehicle.
Yeah, probably. You shouldn't have two vehicles now.
Why not?
Well, because you don't know where to put them. I have a two-person family, and I have one vehicle.
Bah.
Of course, it does bite us in the ass sometimes.
See?
I know.
And that's like saying I shouldn't have like three bicycles in my apartment and two more in storage.
That's also true. You should have five bicycles, Richie. That's absurd.
Why not? One for every occasion.
Oh, Jesus. What occasions do you need? Do you do a lot of mountain biking?
No, I don't have a mountain bike.
What are your bikes?
Oh, actually, I do have one mountain bike, but it's taken apart. And then I have a folding bike. And then I have my vintage Schwinn, which you've seen going around on. Then I've got my road bike. So that's four bikes.
Nice.
You know.
Nice.
See?
Wow.
I know.
Yeah.
And I still want to get an electric scooter for no reason.
Well, I want one of those too, but listen, we're moving in another month and a half or so, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And even though 2 years ago we moved from a 3-bedroom apartment down to a 1-bedroom apartment, which was intentional. We knew what we were doing. And I got rid of a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Just got rid of a ton of stuff. I'm probably going to get rid of even more, even though we're moving to a place that's bigger than what we're in now.
Oh.
But I just don't want things anymore. Done with it. I know. I'm totally done with it. I want just enough to I can live on and make me happy. You know, most of the things I do are surrounding around this computer. So I'd rather get rid of everything else and just upgrade the computer, you know, and make sure I've got a decent one of those. you know, a decent place to live and a decent environment to live in. That's really all I care about. Like, for example, the appliances in the place that we're buying are total junk, right? It's like, it's almost like the person who owns it now, she's only been there less than 2 years.
Yeah.
I don't know why she's leaving. That's a little worrisome, but I don't know why she's leaving. But I feel like she probably bought it with no appliances. Like, the people before that probably took their appliances with them. And then she moved in and didn't really spend a lot of money. Probably got a bunch of used stuff off of Craigslist or something. And they're total junk, right? They're just total junk. It's either that or maybe the place just has really old appliances. I don't know. You know, I really don't.
Interesting.
But, like, the refrigerator doesn't fit in the hole that it's in. Like, it's a really small refrigerator, like, compared to the hole that it's rounded. But we're going to spend, we've already been looking. I mean, we're probably going to spend about $4,000 on appliances.
You are?
Yeah, because they're really important to me, because you spend a lot of time with your appliances, with having them work properly and just be
functional. Wait, are you
going to
get some of those Samsung smart appliances?
Absolutely. 100% on the table.
Wait, what does the Samsung fridge do?
So there's a number of different models, but the one I like has a 21.5-inch display in the door.
Wait, really?
Yes. And it's called this family hub system. So
yeah,
it actually has cameras all inside your refrigerator too. And,
really?
And from the outside of the refrigerator, you can see what's inside. So you save energy by not opening the door, but you can also access that through your smartphone. So if you're out at the store and you're like, man, do I have milk?
Yeah.
You can just look inside your fridge.
Oh my God.
And you can see that. Yeah. Because my thought initially was, because they have a bunch of other apps and stuff you can put on there. It's basically Android based.
Yeah.
And you can leave like notes and stuff, you know, like like you can't really leave like magnetic sticky notes on fridges anymore because most of them are aluminum.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They're not steel. Like ours, you can't stick anything to it. No magnets will go on our refrigerator.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So it's kind of a weird thing. There's magnetized on the side, but the doors aren't.
Ah.
But anyway, so you can do all that. And I was like, well, why wouldn't I just get like an iPad, save myself $1,000 on the refrigerator and get an iPad and just stick it to the front of it. And then I could pull that off and use it for other stuff. But the whole integrated camera system inside and all that stuff is just really intriguing to me. And I know it's probably 100% useless, but for our purposes, it will actually increase the resale of the house because people look at that kind of stuff. And unlike, like if I were to just buy appliances and take them with me.
Yeah.
Or even leave them there. I wouldn't increase the value of the house at all if I bought just like regular appliances. But if I looked and there were like, for example, there's a place for sale next to ours that's identical to our place. And it's got pretty much the same upgrades, except they've got all new appliances.
Yeah.
Not super high end, but newer.
Yeah.
And they're asking $20,000
more. Really?
And it's the same square footage, same layout, same everything. And I know part of that is the appliances they put in there.
Interesting.
So now it's still for sale and it's been on the market way longer, so they're asking way too much more. But I know that if we put a high-end decent appliances in that place, that we can automatically increase what we ask for it when we resell.
Wait a second, what does a smart washer and dryer do?
Mostly it's just the Wi-Fi, so you can be notified on a push notification that your clothes are done. Or you can start it remotely if you set it up or something like that. You know, like if you, for example, I will often dry my my CAP uniform, just run it through the dryer to get some wrinkles and stuff out of it and make it nice. I could throw those in the dryer like before I leave for work. And then when I'm on my way home, I could start the dryer with my phone and then have it running for 5-10 minutes before I get there and be ready to go.
Wow.
Yeah. There's a lot of cool things.
Interesting.
And, you know, I really want the smart stuff because I, from a technology standpoint, and this is good for archaeology too, from a technology standpoint, I like to get something that is the most technologically capable that I can right now.
Yeah.
Because ideally, if you pay enough money for something, you're probably going to have it for a while.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at future upgradability. So maybe these things are Wi-Fi enabled. Like you can get a Wi-Fi enabled stove. What the hell am I going to do with a Wi-Fi enabled stove? But the point is, this stove has an operating system, right? The stove has an operating system that can be upgraded via Wi-Fi. So maybe there's some sort of thing that stove can do in like 3 years that I haven't even conceived of, that the manufacturers haven't even conceived of. It's like Tesla. They're upgrading that all the time.
Yeah.
They're upgrading it over the air all the time with new features because they made it upgradable.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the reason I want to get smart appliances, is not because of what they can do now, but because of what they can possibly do in the future.
Interesting. Just like the new Instant Pot, the one that's like Bluetooth enabled or something.
All kinds of crazy things. Yeah, Instant Pot's going nuts with their stuff. They got this blender now.
They
do? You can only buy at Walmart, apparently, for now. But you just put all your stuff in there, and if you've got a soup that needs to have like an immersion blend on it, or yeah. like a smoothie or something like that, soup is a better example, because you can put all your stuff in there, it will cook it throughout the day,
yeah,
and then immersion blend it when it's done, and you just come home to this blended, creamy, delicious soup.
Interesting.
So amazing. So
God, the only reason I want an instant pot is because you can do a pot roast in like 30 minutes.
Yeah, we just did one literally 2 days ago. I had it for lunch today. Again, pot roast and potatoes and carrots.
Damn it.
My wife cooked it in 40 minutes.
God, that's crazy to me. That is literally crazy to me.
It was amazing. It tasted delicious. A pot roast just fell apart. Potatoes are perfectly done.
Damn it.
It's amazing.
Oh,
literally
man.
A pot roast 2 days ago.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Man, here I am. I've got like a whole, whole cabinet full of pot roast size pans.
Yeah.
For like no reason.
I know.
Whatever.
You can get rid of a bunch of stuff when you get one of those.
That's true.
Yeah, they're about $90 for a decent one. But you got to look at the size. They've got a range of sizes now.
Yeah.
I think we've got like the 6-quart size, but they go up to like 8-quart or something. They go all the way down to like 1-quart.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Anyway, our time's about up. I got a bunch more work to do, and we should go. So thanks for listening to You Call This Archaeology. If you're listening to this on the Archaeology Show, thank you. You can check this out by finding our Facebook page at facebook.com/arcpodnet.
Yeah.
Once you like the page, you'll be notified when we go live. And you can join in. Philip Hodge joined us at the last minute. Thanks everybody for joining in.
Yeah.
And again, share this when you do see it so other people can join.
Yeah.
And our whole point of this is not to just to talk for an hour, but to get people to engage with us.
Really?
And sometimes we do. Oh, that's my point. You know, sometimes you do, sometimes we don't. But this is the one way, one of eventually two ways where we can actually engage with an audience. The second way is the radio show I've got starting on December 7th. So check out knvc.org, and you can see the streaming link on there. And I'll be putting some stuff about that this next week. And noon on Fridays when I go live.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the next three episodes after that will be recorded because I'll be out of town. There's just something going on for those next 3 weekends. But either way, you can call in on that first show, and then starting in January, probably most of the shows. So
interesting.
Yeah. And you can, Richie's catching up on the video of this, so if you want to rewatch the video, you can do it on our Facebook page, but there's a higher quality version at
Happy Archaeology Fun Time.
On YouTube.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Richie.
Yeah.
Thanks everybody for joining us. And we'll see you next time.
I don't know if they saw me wave.
I don't know if they did.
Thanks for listening to the Archaeology Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. You can provide feedback using the contact button on the right side of the website at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/archaeology. Or you can email Chris at archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Please like and share the show wherever you saw it so more people can have a chance to listen and learn. Send us show suggestions and follow ArcPodNet on Twitter and Instagram. This show is produced by the Archaeology Podcast Network. Opinions are solely those of the hosts and guests of the show. However, the APN stands by their hosts. Special thanks to the band Sea Hero for letting us use their song, I Wish You'd Look. Check out their albums on Bandcamp at seahero.bandcamp.com. Check out our next episode in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, keep learning, keep discovering new things, and keep listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network. Have an awesome day. This show is produced and recorded by the Archaeology Podcast Network, Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle, in Reno, Nevada, at the Reno Collective.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.